I was going to try to say this before in the milestones, but I just want to, although someone said offer condolences, congratulations to Susan Uliano for taking on the town in the honor of civility. And you can clap if you can. It's not an easy job, but I know you'll do well. And I also want to thank Hunter Bennett for sharing his gifts with us this morning. So thank you, Hunter. Okay, so I've been thinking a lot about this idea of that we're a justice-seeking people and what it means to be a Unitarian Universalist. And in some ways, I remember just a few years ago when I was a teen. Okay, maybe it was more than a few years ago.
Nice try.
I know, right? It's getting more and more every year. It's kind of horrifying. When I was a teen, and I don't know if the teens feel this now, but I'm guessing that they do, I felt cut off from what should have been my focus growing up, just being a kid. You know what I mean? Like, I was cut off from that during a time when our country's leadership had clearly lost their collective minds. The Nixon years, Ford and Carter, and then into the Reagan administration. Ugh, I can't even go there. It was a difficult time to be young, impressionable, and impassioned. I felt lied to by the powers that be. I saw discontent all around me, and I realized in large measure that integrity was nothing more than a word. And that's a very sad thing for a teenager to sort of come up with. The only place that my peers and I could turn was to march for justice and to music. I was inspired, as I explained in a sermon in January, by the likes of Pete Seeger, Bob Dylan, Carole King, and Holly Knear, all calling me to act, not to mention the Beatles, of course. What compels us to speak when we really want to seek justice? What compels us or others to be silent? Which one are we, outspoken or silent? I've been thinking about what called me at 16 to get involved, what compelled a teen to fight against the proliferation of nuclear power, to fight for gay and lesbian rights, to fight for women's equality. First and foremost, a friend invited me to get involved. It took a friend. Secondly, these were causes that were near and dear to my heart. So when the Constellation Energy Nuclear Group, also known as SANG, was operating a nuclear power plant on Lake Ontario, a short trip down the river, St. Lawrence River, to my parents' summer home, I was horrified and I was outraged that such a thing existed with a potential of such devastating outcomes right in my neighborhood. What is it that impassions us about a specific issue? Be it the environment and alternative energy or education or immigration or the economy, I believe that it has to feel personal. We need to be affected to really get fully engaged and enraged. In specific, soon after turning 18, I was somewhat closeted and confused about who I was as a young adult, wondering about my place in the world and if I would ever be truly accepted anywhere. I was shocked and appalled on November 27, 1978, when Supervisor Harvey Milk, an openly gay man who was elected to serve the city of San Francisco, was assassinated by his colleague, Dan White. This event followed in the wake of a civil rights movement a decade earlier, and the infamous gay Stonewall riots, which took place in 1969. This assassination in San Francisco was tinder for a larger movement, a revolution, if you will. The culture of us and them, regardless of who us was and who they were, was set. And the issues drove a wedge between race, sexual orientation, and gender equality and identity. We had to self-identify. We had to choose our beliefs. The discontent and inequality compelled many to stand up and act out with regard to gay and lesbian civil rights. At a vigil for Supervisor Harvey Milk in 1978, the singer-songwriter Holly Knear penned the words to comfort and to diffuse those who were so angered and grieving. She sang out, "We are a gentle and angry people, and we are singing for our lives." We are a justice-seeking people. We are young and old together. We are a land of many colors. We are gay and straight together. We are a gentle, loving people. And we are singing, singing for our lives. That's a pretty powerful statement. We are a gentle and loving people, and yet we are outraged. These were words of reconciliation at a gathering of identities and differences, yet people were working, singing as one. Not long after writing her anthem, or maybe better yet, her plea, it made its way to many oppressed communities around the world who chose to adopt this song as their own. And Holly Neer became an advocate and activist for justice. She explained during the 30th anniversary memorial service for Harvey Milk that the song went out all across the world and people wrote their own lyrics to share and acknowledge their own identities, to which Holly responded with the verse, and I love this verse, "We are all in this together. We are singing, singing for our lives." What a message. That we are all in this together. I had the privilege to meet Holly Neer in 2004 when she was selected as the Unitarian Universalist Ware Speaker. She spoke of her life as an advocate for peaceful change. She spoke about our need for courage to face down the corporate machine that runs this world. Holly inspired me when she spoke about her distraction and passion for life. She began to work against militarism for women, for gay and lesbian rights. And while she admitted that she'd been accused of being a cause hopper, explained that she saw what connected us. Her goal, she said, was to be fascinated rather than fearful. Fascinated rather than fearful. I love that. I'm certain if Holly Neer is a Unitarian Universalist, although I'm not sure if she is, she and, along with Pete Seeger, who is a UU, have spent a significant amount of time singing in Unitarian Universalist churches and at our gatherings, marching in solidarity with us and being a voice singing out for reason and justice in the public square. And many of us have sung along. How many people have seen Holly Neer? So few of us. What is it that impassions us to step up and out, to act in the name of justice? What is it? Throughout history, Unitarians and Universalists have been called to and have become active participants in many social justice movements in the 19th, 20th, and now the 21st century. Unitarian Universalist, my idol of all time, Theodore Parker, was a prominent abolitionist, defending fugitive slaves and offering support to American abolitionist John Brown. Theodore Parker preached on Sundays with a gun on his pulpit to defend the idea of the abolitionist movement and protect people. I don't need to have a gun here, so I'm just going to say. Other reformers, including Universalists such as Charles Spear, who called for prison reform, Clara Barton, who went from Civil War angel of the battlefield to the founder of American Red Cross, Unitarians such as Dorothea Dix fought to break the chains of people incarcerated in mental hospitals, and Samuel Gridley Howe started schools for the blind. For the last two centuries, Unitarians and Universalists have been at the forefront of movements working to free people from whatever bonds may oppress them, and that is something we can be very proud about. But our work is not over. Throughout history, our forebears have been called to stand on the side of love, to speak out against injustice, and to take action. And our work is not over yet. How do we live an authentic life with integrity while endeavoring to be open-hearted and open-minded, all while trying to not profile people based on socioeconomic class, color, sexual orientation, or gender identity? I would invite us to remember what the word integrity means. Integrity is the quality of being honest and having strong moral principles, moral uprightness. It is generally a personal choice to uphold oneself to consistently moral and ethical standards. I believe that we do have a sense of integrity, and yet only I know, or you know, what is truly in our hearts and how it compels us to respond to the call of need in our world. I also believe that we must expect more from our neighbor. It takes more than just loving our neighbor as ourself. It also takes us reminding them of being their better selves. You know, I think about watching people throw cigarette butts out the window or doing things that I just don't think are okay. What will motivate us to speak? Here is the rub. Who knows which moral standard to build our lives upon? There's a lot of them out there. And I would ask that the standard needs to be one that causes the least amount of emotional, intellectual, and physical oppression and damage. A wise leader, Chief Orrin Lyons, a faith keeper and member of the Onondaga Council of Chiefs of the Six Nations of the Iroquois Confederacy, that's a title, spoke a few years ago at Bioneers Conference and shared his clan's position. He explained, "We believe in the creation, we believe in a higher power, we believe in the way that we are intertwined, the way that we live with one another, all of this, one being." And so that's what we've been gauging all our agreements on down through the centuries, one being. He believes that we must work together to create a just world, and I would agree with him. Sorting this out will take some effort, but we have to call the corporate monster to atone for its sins. We must dismantle a system of government that is openly for sale and can be persuaded by lobbyists oozing money and favors. We have to see and to feel the offense firsthand. We need to own the outrage. If our neighbor bleeds with the wound of injustice and oppression, we must make their issue our issue. They must become a part of us, part of we, the people. Every day it is important for us to remember, even when we live our lives in relative comfort, we have to be disgusted with how others are forced to live. This is how we become truly welcoming of the other. Those people who do not behave like, look like, or think like us. All of humankind's issues are my issues. All of humankind's pain is my pain. It matters if one is shot on the street in cold blood for no offense. It matters that someone is tortured and charged for the privilege in the prison complex. It matters if the poorest among us may pay double or triple for the price of a gallon of milk more than we do. And it matters if they cannot afford good food and are forced to eat the corporate slop on the daily. It matters. Humankind, humans, corporate sins are our sins. If we say or do nothing, corporations exist so individuals acting on behalf of their stockholders can remain blameless, and that is not okay. We must educate ourselves and say no. We must march and write letters and stand vigil. We cannot stand by idly hoping someone else will be compelled. We must show up and demand a different world, a different outcome. The corporate monster and many of the politicians pray that we will remain asleep, appeased by what we have achieved, earned, built. Because of our color, our socioeconomic class, because of our normative behavior and gender identity, we have been given the opportunity to thrive while others have not. Immigrants, people of color, veterans, older people, people who are sick, and those who do not live in traditional ways, or those who speak up and refuse to be a part of such a system of corruption, are marginalized, or worse yet, imprisoned. I am called to remember a statement of conscience that was shared by a German Protestant pastor many, many years ago, Martin Niemöller, that called all who heard to realize a simple fact about the Nazi regime. It has stuck with me for a very long time, because even today, it is real, it is true. First they came for the socialists, and I did not speak out, because I was not a socialist. And then they came for the trade unionists, and I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, and I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. And then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak for me. Like Holly Near's song, this passage has been adopted and shared in a myriad of ways, trying to wake up and motivate us to do something before it is too late. Reminding us that ultimately it is each one of us that is hurt when someone, anyone suffers in this world. When someone is mistreated, murdered, hungry, homeless, or incarcerated, we are all affected. I know that you all know this. I know that you are already working hard to change the world in many ways, and I understand that in large measure, I am preaching to the choir. However, as we stand on the threshold of so many global concerns, from war to famine to climate change to corruption and greed, it can be overwhelming enough to cause us to cloister, to want to take care of only our own tribe, our own people, those who think and act and look like us. But this is not enough. As we think about our place in the world as Unitarian Universalists, I ask that we heed the clarion call to stand on the side of love and truly stand, to witness for love, but most of all, to act in love. Every moment of every day, when we feel overwhelmed and ready to just unplug from what we see and or hear, do not. Do not. I encourage us to feel affected and outraged and committed to care enough to be the change. I know it sounds hokey, to be the change. This morning, I woke up to a daily email that I get from Commit to Respond. It's a UU effort to wake us up about climate change, and it is from a colleague of mine who shared the following. It is time to recommit to building a different way of being with each other and with Mother Earth. It is time to recommit to co-creating the beloved community instead of sacrifice zones where people suffer so that the rest of us can have cheaper energy and goods. We will build communities where people share equally in both burdens and benefits. Instead of treating workers and animals alike as expendable resources to be used for profit, we will value all lives and relate to each other, as Martin Buber taught us, as I and thou. In committing to building the beloved community, we're not just talking about changing laws and policies, although changes in laws and policies are urgently needed, but changes in policies alone will not ultimately work unless we transform the dormant culture and way of being. Excuse me. As people of faith, we are uniquely situated to help bring this about by keeping our actions grounded in our principles and values, by a spiritual practice of reflecting on the effects of our actions, and by intentionally, faithfully looking to the voices and leadership of those marginalized by the current dominant paradigm. Dearest friends, I will be focusing my energy moving forward into the next year on the reality of and the far-reaching consequences of climate change. To do anything less would be unconscionable to my mind, especially when I see children like Liam and Freddie, teens like Oliver and Nick and Luca and Joseph, Anna and Camille. I just can't stand by and do nothing or wait for the scientists to get it all on the same page and confirm that what we're seeing is really true. We do not have time to wait to be certain. We must act. I pray that you will also feel motivated. It doesn't have to be about climate change. It could be about the economy or hunger or immigration, but to feel motivated, truly affected, and that we, you and I, can catch fire with the passion for seeing, knowing, and doing the right thing in our world. That is what being a Unitarian Universalist is really all about. That is our prayer in the world, is our social justice and our action. May it be so. Blessed be. Amen.